Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. The following program is a PodcastOne.com production. He started in a small town in Texas. Worked his ass off to become one of the most famous wrestlers of all time.
We're going to take care of business tonight, and that's the bottom line.
And now, he's dominating the world of on-demand audio. And he's doing it for the working man.
This is a damn good outlet for me to spew the bullshit off my brain. Yeah!
This is the Steve Austin Show. Unleashed.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the set of Broken Skull Challenge. We've been filming for a couple of weeks, and we're in a groove. Hey, I want you guys to check out the new Podcast One app. It's available now for download at the App Store or Google Play. Hey, there ain't another podcast app like this one anywhere, and that's because the new Podcast One app is loaded with some cool features that let you do a lot more than just listen to your favorite shows. You can access behind-the-scenes photos, articles, and connect with other fans of the shows you like. And you can watch over 1,000 360 virtual reality videos. You can actually watch some of your favorite shows in virtual reality. It's like you're sitting right in a room with them. So get to the App Store, Google Play, and download the new Podcast One app now. All right, folks, coming up today, I've got Sean X-Pac Waltman back on the show, and this time we're answering some questions that y'all sent in. We're talking a little bit about ring psychology. X-Pac's got some stories about working with Big Van Vader, Kane, and Randy Savage, and we're going to get into the upcoming Floyd Mayweather-Conor McGregor fight as well. Before we get to Sean, hey man, God damn it, I'm sitting in my pickup truck at the Broken Skull Challenge compound. Sitting right here. Let me turn my key on. Man, I tell you what. Driver one says I got 79,506 miles on this thing. You know, you guys probably heard my podcast when I left the Broken Skull Ranch down there in South Texas. I sold that place, my wife and I went back with my trailer, got all my guns, a couple of taxidermy things, and headed out on the highway from Marina Del Rey. Now, when I left Tilden, my check engine light was on. I called my mechanic, Neil Merchant, right there in Tilden, Texas. If you get in a jam, call Neil. He can fix anything, and he is mobile. He will come to you, and he's got good prices. I asked O'Neill, I said, hey, man, I said, my check engine light's on. All my gauges look good. Temperature's good. Oil pressure's good. Is this thing going to make it back to L.A.? Why is my check engine light on? He assured me that this truck would make it back to L.A., and it did. Ever since I got back, I ain't had time to take it to the shop to get it checked out and see why the check engine light is on. Fast forward to right now. Well, no, don't fast forward to right now. A couple weeks ago, a week ago, whenever it was, when we had to put Hershey down, man, I got in this truck and I hauled ass back to the house, and we did that. I came on back. And ever since then, that check engine light has been on. Now it's not just on. Now it's flashing on and off intermittently. So it's like, hey, man, you better get my ass to the shop before I conk out on you. The other day, I was riding out here, and I was thinking, man, I don't know if this motherfucker's going to make it or not, but I hope it does. It made it out here. When I start that thing up and put it in gear, that's when it really kind of idles down. It kind of starts running like it's got a little cam in it, but it don't got a cam. It's running rough. It could be a minor problem. I don't know. I'm going to take it to the shop as soon as I get a chance. But as I was riding home, hauling ass, making those curves back to the house the other day, it finally dawned on me. You know, I love this pickup truck. It's been good to me. We've been driving this sumbitch back and forth to the ranch forever. I bought it brand new in Dilley, Texas from Trey Tindall, the same guy that I used to hunt with in Cotulla, Texas. That's the very same guy that I bought Hershey the Wonder Dog from. Bought it brand new in 2003, and it's been sitting in my barn for a long-ass time. It doesn't have very many miles on it for 2003. And I finally told myself, as much as I like his thing, it's two-tone, white and pewter, with gray leather interior, cruise control, AM/FM CD player, put a little amp and a sub in it. I told myself, God damn it, dude, you've been working your ass off. Take your cheap ass down to the store, down to the dealership, and get you a goddamn new truck. Hell, I was out there in Long Beach, California a few weeks ago at Iron Addicts Gym, and I was talking to C.T. Fletcher. And C.T. ain't doing real good right now. I'm hoping he's hanging in there. He's got a few heart issues. And C.T. told me, you know how C.T. talks, man. When he tells you something, it's the bottom line. He said, Steve, you cheap-ass motherfucker, go buy you a new truck. So I think I'm finally going to heed C.T.'s advice. I'm going to go out once I get done filming, and I'm going to drive every half-ton and every three-quarter-ton truck out on the market that there is. Ford, Chevy, Dodge, Nissan, Toyota. What the fuck am I missing? Those are your major brands. I'm going to check into the gas motors. I'm going to check into the diesel motors. I'm kind of leaning diesel because I want to pull my Kawasaki mules around, but I'm going to consider gas. And four-door. I'm going to be hauling some trailers, so I want to make sure that sumbitch is able to tow. I'm going to test drive every goddamn truck out there. I'm going to check out that new Raptor. I'm going to check out the new Ram 3/4-ton Power Wagon. I'm going to check out all the diesel offerings, and then I'm going to make a decision, and I'm finally going to pull the trigger and get my stupid ass a new truck. Shit, I listened to CT's advice. I said, son, bitch, you ain't getting no younger. Go get yourself a new truck. This motherfucker's going to be 18 years old when it clicks over in the new year. It's 14 years right now, and it's been good to me. Probably it's a minor problem with that motor. I don't know. I'll get that checked out. But I finally had that come to Jesus meeting with myself. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, Scotty Kachera, down there in Edna, Texas. We graduated Edna High School together in 1983. He played center. I was a running back. And we were talking cars and trucks. And Scotty's a big Corvette guy. I am too. Everybody loves a Corvette. I've had three of them. My last one was a 2007 silver, and I sold it a couple years ago when I got into the SUV market, get up off the ground so I ain't got to get up out of something and stand all the way up with those long-ass doors and tight-ass L.A. traffic. I should have kept that goddamn thing. But anyway, I was talking myself into a new Corvette. I was going to get the Grand Sport, and I figured, dude, just go ahead and get yourself a goddamn Corvette. Stick it around somewhere in a barn, in a garage. Don't drive it too much. Just because it's always cool to have that damn hot rod just parked there. But after I thought about it, I came to my senses. I said, dude, it'd be stupid to get another goddamn car like that. Your ass has a hard time getting down, getting up. What do you need to sit on the ground for in a Corvette? And then try to get up out of the motherfucker. So I talked myself out of a Corvette, but I am talking myself into a new pickup truck. So that's a little shenanigan going on right here. I'm looking forward to seeing all the new offerings, and that's my truck story. And this sumbitch has been good to me, but it's time to move on down the road and get another one. Man, I'm sitting in my pickup truck right now. I'm looking at my Kawasaki Mule, four-wheel drive. I got my Traeger. You might be able to hear that thing in the background. I just fired it up. I'm using mesquite pellets. I looked over there in my storage container. I've got cherry, I've got apple, I've got more mesquite, and I've got pecan pellets. I haven't gotten into those other flavors. I've been cooking on mesquite. I just ran out of mesquite, and I'm going to try one of those other bags next time I load that thing up. That goddamn grill, man, I tell you what, that sumbitch, I got it set on 350 right now. I got four pieces of chicken in my camper. I got a piece of salmon for tonight. Y'all know the deal. I cook my salmon. I eat that for dinner with a bag of spinach that I microwave. And then those four pieces of chicken will be my two meals tomorrow while I'm filming, so I ain't got to cook shit. So I tell you what, I told y'all I was going to get a pellet grill. This motherfucker has been amazing and has been a lifesaver. I put shit on this thing. I time it out. I got one of those thermometers. I stick in that meat, tell me what the internal temperature of the meat is, and I pull it off accordingly. Old Chad Ward came out here. He's a damn barbecue champion from, goddamn it, Whiskey Bent Barbecue. And I tell you what, he gave me a couple of barbecue tips. And I've been putting that rub that they supplied on that damn chicken, that salmon. I tell you what, if you want some goddamn good chicken rub, check out that Traeger chicken rub. It works damn good on salmon, too, because it's got a little sweet to it. And I ain't cooked a bad meal since I got this motherfucker. Now, I'm dropping chicken breasts everywhere. I'm dropping them on the ground. I'm dropping them in the back of the grill. But, man, I ain't burnt nothing. I ain't overcooked nothing. And everything I've cooked has been spot on. So, motherfucker, I'm happy with this goddamn grill. It's a whole different experience. And it took a little bit of... I didn't even take no getting used to. I knocked the first meal out of the park and been cooking like a motherfucker ever since. Anyway, enough about trucks and barbecues and shit like that. God damn, man, the sun's going down out here. As I record to open this podcast, it's 20 till 8 on Tuesday evening. Like I said, I'm sitting in my pickup truck. I got Hershey the Wonder Dog's collar hanging from my rear view mirror. Got her picture in there in my bedroom, and I've been thinking about that dog a lot. God damn it, being so busy has been a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing because it kind of kept my mind, you know, doing what I got to do. I got to take care of business. We got 90 people out here on this crew. We've got contestants coming in from around the United States coming out here to give it their best. And, man, I hadn't really been able to process and think too much. Well, I have, but I got to take care of business. And I got over here yesterday and I looked at that picture of Hershey. And I'll tell you what, man, I really, really, really missed that dog. She was so, like I told you in that one podcast, I can't tell you what the dog meant to me, but boy, I tell you, when I miss her presence and when I go home to 316 Gimmick Street, it's not even the same. And the dogs are still selling. Moolah is still depressed. She still swims and plays with Callie, but she has her moments. And, I'll tell you what, it's been a process, and I'll probably, once I get filming here, I'll finish the process and go about my business. Don't get me wrong, I'm not going to break down and start crying like a motherfucker. I'm just saying I've been busy, but I still think about that damn dog, and shit, we miss her around the house. Broken Skull Challenge, toughest show on television. God damn, you talk about a sumbitch of a season. These people are coming out here and going absolute just ballistic, crazy, just competition, new challenges, taking it to a whole nother level. It's just a real fun show to work on. It's always hotter than blazes out here. Fuck, we hit 97 today, and that ain't even hot. We could, by the end of the day, we hit 93. 93 is like shit. 93 is like 60. So temperature's been pretty good for us. I think maybe next week we'll get into the hundreds. That heat wave that they was talking about coming through here and knocking all the all-time highs off the charts, it never really materialized. We had clouds. We had a flash flood warning. It rained like a bitch one day. Didn't affect us none. We just kept on rolling. Things are going good. I'm looking forward to wrapping this show up. I want to hit the road. I want to get in the camper, in the RV, and I want to head down to Texas to see my mom and dad and visit my brothers and my sister in Texas. And then I want to get back up to California and take a trip with my wife. And I want to head over to Nevada and kind of get into scouting with my brother-in-law, Mitch, over at Nevada Hunting Services. And I got that mule deer tag this year, and I'm looking forward to using that thing. And quite frankly, I don't care if I get one or not. I just want to get out there in the outdoors with my Kawasaki mule and just kick it. And I'd actually like to find some sheds and shit like that. I've been looking at some timelines out there and everybody's shed hunting out there. So I know they'll probably be all picked up by the time I get out there. But you never know when you're out there in the woods when you're going to stumble across something. And I'm looking forward just to getting out in the outdoors and getting off this set and taking a deep breath of fresh air and enjoying myself. If you ain't never been in the great outdoors, get your ass outdoors and go get some. You ain't got to hunt. Go hike and get outdoors and get engaged. Enjoy yourself. Take a deep breath of fresh air. Fuck it. Let's talk about X-Pac. He's coming up. But first, I know how hard it is to find good, hard-working, and talented employees. And if you're looking to fill a position at your company, then you need to get to ZipRecruiter.com so you can find the best candidates for the job you need to fill. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click, and then let ZipRecruiter do the rest. Their powerful technology matches the right people to your job, and that's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter does not depend on candidates finding you. ZipRecruiter finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. And here's the best part. You don't have to mess with sorting through emails or juggling calls to your office. You can simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. You heard me right. I said free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Steve. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Steve. One more time for the hearing impaired. To post your job for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/Steve.
Hey, everyone. It's former WWE host Lillian Garcia. Let me ask you a question. Do you ever wonder how your favorite stars make it to the big time? Then come check out my new show, Chasing Glory, with Lillian Garcia on PodcastOne.com. Hear me chat with some of your favorite athletes and entertainers about their rise to the top. It's about to get real, raw, and inspiring. So join me for new episodes every Monday on PodcastOne.com, the new Podcast One app, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
Steve Austin, Unleashed.
All right, welcome back to the podcast. Change of plans, called an audible. Me and Sean thought we're going to watch a match and break it down, but we were sitting there watching the match and not saying anything. That didn't really transfer as far as a podcast because it's audio.
No, but I think we highly recommend that everyone watch this match when they get a chance.
Yeah, I told them on the last podcast. So anyway, back to the business at hand, calling things on the fly. Hey, one of the matches we were talking about breaking down was Steamboat versus Savage from WrestleMania 3. And it was funny because back in the day, you know, when you first get into business, or back when we did anyway, you took a lot of pride in calling everything in the ring.
Yes.
You might know the finish, but, well, you did know the finish because you could be dressing in separate dressing rooms depending on how some buildings were laid out. And the referee would actually go back and forth and tell you the finish. And you had to create everything out there, and that was just the only way you could do it. As the business has evolved, there's communication. At the end of the day, it's a performance. It's a match. It takes however much time, you know, however much you can get in there that makes sense. You know, and the business is sped up. You know, things move a lot faster. But when's the last time you wrestled?
Oh, I had a match a few weeks ago.
So, I mean, how much talking do you do these days before you go in the ring? Or do you prefer the old days back in the day when you just strictly called it in the ring?
Here's the thing. Now, I don't leave anything to chance. I have too many, like, nagging injuries. Everything is calculated now. But, you know, back in the day, you know, I used to pride myself in being able to go out there and just call it on the fly. I think I know what you're getting at as far as this match goes because, you know, we're talking about Randy Savage, and Randy, it's very well known that he liked to have things laid out, you know, in advance. Not that he followed everything from like steps 1, 2, 3, 4, like because if you watch him, you can see ad libs in there too, and he doesn't rush everything and that, but that's how he liked to do it. And I've heard people, you know, some people criticize that because, you know, they think it's better if you do. To me, it's art, and however, like, I don't need to pick apart and overanalyze somebody's method of you know, creating that art. Just let me sit back and enjoy the art itself.
I remember back in the day, like when I would talk about this match with Steve Regal, my old travel partner, William Regal, we were like, oh man, it's an awesome match. Unbelievable. Yes. And especially when you watched it as it happened.
I think a guy like Steve might get a little bit too caught up in
No, he did it as well as I did. Because, like, we would both recognize it was a great match, but it's like, well, you know, they did kind of predetermine some things. And
sure.
This is back in the day, you know, in our last podcast when we talked, it was like, you know, you think, hey, man, this guy's not that great. He's just a high spot worker, blah, blah. All of a sudden you get in territory. Hey, man, he really is that good.
Yeah.
This match is a great match no matter how you slice it. At the end of the day, it's what the people see. And like you said, it's an interpretation. So what by ever means, whatever means you need, then so be it. But we kind of would put an asterisk by this match back in the day because they weren't really calling it all in the ring. And so there was that asterisk. But as a match, I mean – it's one of the best ever. But you go back to Flair Steamboat, all those matches that they had, yes, with all the history that they drew upon, even they had probably had a couple of heat spots or hope spots or false finishes.
Well, they worked every night.
Yeah, well, they worked every night. But, hey, man, let's throw this there and put instead of that. Flair was a master of calling everything in the ring. And the thing I liked about watching Flair's work is you can watch with that bushy head of hair he had before he got the haircut. But even when he had that, I mean, when he pulls somebody up, and I'm acting this out to Sean as he can see me, but when he pulls up that elbow, he's got that hair draped across here, and his opponent is right here, he's making a call.
Yep.
And so, you know, he's calling stuff on the fly. Yeah, some of it might have been, you know, hey, this
stuff
from there,
he had Kansas, done before.
The old famous story, Harley Race, Kansas City, 82.
Sure.
You know, but I like to watch Flair work. Just I like to watch Flair work when I know he's making a call, but I can't see him making a call.
Gotcha. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it was something like I could never see Rick calling
ever
a spot.
Almost.
Just like I could never see Barry Windham getting color.
Right.
Ever. I never saw him get color once.
That's interesting.
I mean, I saw him get color. Yeah. I just didn't see him get color.
Right.
So, damn. Sorry, I had a brain fart just now.
No. But, I mean, just that match. It was one of the greatest matches of all time. But back in the day, I would think, yeah, you know, now look at it like, oh, man.
So, like, I was just making me think, you know, okay, if you're going to do it that way, you better damn sure know what the people want and when they want it. And in that particular instance, they knew exactly what the people wanted.
But that's my whole thing with, you're making a hell of an educated guess on what these people are going to buy. Because basically, you're writing a movie, and then you're going to go out there and perform the movie, and pretty much you're guaranteeing that people are going to be on the same ride with you.
Yeah.
Man, that's a bold gamble because someday I remember one time I worked out a match on Monday Night Raw with Chris Benoit. They didn't give us enough time as a live match, and I was mad because I was really hot at the time, and I really liked working with Chris Benoit because I thought it was great.
Yeah.
And then the next night, they put us in the ring again for SmackDown. This was going to be like live to tape or to tape, whatever you want to call it. It just wasn't live. So I told Chris, I said, hey, man, I said, let's go out there and have a hell of a match. I said, don't worry about the time. I said, well, go home when I say go home. I said, don't worry. I got that. I'll take the heat.
Yeah.
Because I could.
Yeah.
You know, if you go back to WrestleMania 13, that was Brett.
Gotcha.
Brett said, I got the heat. He goes, don't worry about it. And I said, cool. So he had my back. I didn't have enough tenure there. Brett did. And so then with Chris Benoit, I said, hey, don't worry about it. We'll go home when I say go home. And I said, also, because I wanted to have a damn good match with him. And I said, also, I told him, I said, man, I said, I don't see you really making a comeback on me, you know, from a traditional standpoint. I see
he wasn't
you,
that guy.
You know, grab a German suplex, a belly to back, and just start German me 10 times, and then we'll go home. And we knew going out there, you know, he was going to do a top rope dive, and I was going to, you know, prop up that belt. And we ended up hard way, and it worked perfect. We've just been bombarded with all my dogs. And it hard-weighed him, which is perfect. But, dude, we went out there, and I'm holding up my hand in front of Sean. We had five things that we knew were going to happen.
Yes.
The rest we filled in the blanks on live TV. And what's so fun about that is you can't mess up. And basically you're gauging, you know, what you do. You listen to the crowd. You form, hey, man, okay, we're going here. I thought we were going to go here, but now we're going over here. Because we got him.
And Chris was the kind of guy that he was. He's the kind of guy, like you're saying, you got some bullet points, and then you figure out everything else out. He wasn't that guy that you could really, like, lay a match out with. That wasn't him. I remember DDP came to him one time with the whole, like, before anybody was doing that, right. Dallas had the whole list of Chris's moves for Chris. You know, Chris just wasn't that kind of guy that could, you know. That could, you know.
No, that dude was totally spontaneous.
Exactly.
Spontaneous. And then it's almost, and Dallas is one of my best friends, but it's almost, when you put yourself in Chris Benoit's shoes, it's almost insulting for some guy who's older than you chronologically, younger than you, and as far as years in the business, then hands you the match or the move list. You know, so it's kind of like, hey, man, this might not be what I want to do. I don't know what I'm going to do once I get in that moment. Credit to Dallas, though.
A little ahead of his time, right?
For having the damn gumption. Yeah. Because to go back to our other podcast, he's hungry. He wants to knock the damn, you know, a grand slam out of the park, and he knows this is his opportunity. So he's not leaving anything to chance. He's laying out his strategy of what he thinks will work, and so I got to give him props for that.
Yeah, and Dallas didn't have the same amount of time to get better as everyone else did. He had to do it a lot quicker because, you know, he was older and there's not too many shopping days left till Christmas for him.
Right.
You know, as far as, you know,
but also it's just a wherewithal for him to put the pressure on himself to want to deliver a slam dunk performance. Here's something. It was very interesting when I got into the business. I was used to pretty much textbook, you know, if I'm the baby, and I was when I first started, you know, and I can't hear very good, but he'll tell me what to do pretty much. There wasn't a whole lot of freelancing on my part because I was working with 10 and 15 year veterans who were very patient with my dumb ass. And I remember working with Jerry Lawler. Lawler likes to call spots while you're pacing around the ring. And he's telling me he booked himself with me. Lawler had the book. He booked himself with me 3 shots, Memphis, Louisville, and Evansville. That first night in Memphis, we're walking around the ring. We haven't locked up yet. He goes, all right, grab a headlock, tackle, drop down, hip toss. I go, what? He says the spot again. I said, what?
Who's doing the tackle?
He said the spot again. Basically, someone in the front row said, he said, grab a headlock, tackle, drop down, hip toss.
Oh, no.
I was like, you moron. I got to get a hearing aid. But the point I was going to get at, it was working with Steamboat. And when I first got in with Steamboat, I picked up the mechanics pretty good once I was on the road in a full-time rotation because, you know, dude, every time you – more repetitions, better you get. So we're getting my chops up. I was pretty goddamn good mechanic. I was aggressive. I was hungry. I was pretty cocky. I was the shits.
Yeah.
But I thought I was pretty good. You know how it is.
I thought you were great.
All of a sudden, I get in there with Ricky Steamboat, and all of a sudden, man, I'll grab a headlock. He's already top wrist and out of it. I didn't call a top wrist lock. That's him doing his end.
Yeah.
You do something, and that's just – and that's one of those things that you do. It's almost like a reversal.
Yeah.
Because if you want to reverse it back, then you reverse it back. But all of a sudden, he had top wrist, and I'm like, oh – here's the opportunity where I get a chance to pull his hair back into the headlock.
Yeah.
And he's stuck in a headlock again. Uh-huh. But he was one of those guys, like I'm saying, you do something, another guy just, you know, it's like dancing. You do your thing. But when Steamer did that, I was like, oh, this is cool. I don't have to tell this guy everything to do like people have been telling me. He knows. You know, I'm working with Ricky Steamboat, but now it goes without saying.
So he goes up into the top wrist lock and the people start coming?
Oh, yeah. We'd work it. And, you know, it'd be kind of because we're the same size, basically. I might have been a little bit bigger back in the day. So, but because I was a heel, you know, it was pretty much a traditional get the referee over here, pull him back into that headlock. We didn't go crazy with that.
Were you stickler on, hey, the heel calls the match? Because I was always, who's ever has more experience and who's ever better can call it.
It's real interesting because when I got into business, you know, the veteran guys that I was working with was calling the matches. And then one time we was working in Louisville, and I was working with Danny Davis. And Danny Davis had 15 years in the business. And the whole time I was driving to the building, I was thinking about – because I already started calling my matches way back then. If I wasn't working with, you know, Danny or Lawler or Dundee or someone like that, if I was working with Superstar, I listened to Superstar. Mm. And I loved working with him. He helped me out tremendously. But that night I was working with Danny Davis. I don't need to think of anything because he's going to just guide me around like a puppy. And he goes, all right, kid, I'll see you out there. I came up to him and I said, hey, Danny, I said, I was just wondering, what do you want to do? He goes, whatever you want. He goes, you call it. I said, Danny, I said, normally I think of what I'm going to do when I'm coming to the building, but since I was working with you, I figured I'd listen to you. He goes, no, I've seen you work. If you get stuck, I'll help you out. And I was like, holy, this guy just put a big 100-pound anvil on my back. This is pressure. There's this veteran who has enough confidence in this punk green-ass kid to call a match. Anyway, it was kind of like a 50-50 deal.
Yeah.
I always give Danny so much credit for helping me the way he did. And like, man, I would just say to him, hey, Danny, if I'm trying to initiate this, but I need to be on the receiving end of it, what do I do? He goes, simple, we'll do this, but then you'll just reverse it. Or I'll reverse it, so then you're on the receiving end. But little things like that, you know, to answer your question, you always hear the heels traditionally call the match. Not so much. I always call the match even when I was a baby. Now, Triple H, because he's such a ring general, that son of a bitch always likes to call the match. Yeah. And anyway, we had a great in-ring chemistry and rivalry because I always want to call a match, but he He always beat me to the punch, bastard.
Were you guys always on the same page usually, though?
Oh, yeah, always on the same page. Yeah. But it was a stage where one time we were forced to work a pay-per-view together, and I was starting to get kind of – I had heat. I was a heel. But working against him, he was the heel and I was the baby. And so that was the last thing in the world that I wanted to happen, because when I initially went to WWF, I was a heel.
Yeah.
But if I'm working with him, then I was going to be the baby, because I was starting to get a little cool, but I hadn't turned yet. And so all of a sudden he calls the damn, you know, match. It was something where it was a babyface spot. We executed it, and boy, all of a sudden the crowd popped like crazy, or for what it was. Yeah. But, you know, he was the established. He was like, you son of a bitch. You got me again. I think experienced guy in the ring.
Well, you were trying to out-heal him, then he beat you to the punch?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I kind of let him. I mean, it's like, what sure. do you do? You know, we were pretty good buds. You know, a lot of mutual respect. Because, he, you know, when he came into WCW, it was interesting because I think, man, I had a straggly, long, blonde hair. And here comes Paul. You know, he had a good look and not the greatest gimmick in the world. But, you know, he's a good solid mechanic. In the
oh,
ring.
Yeah.
And I think WCW, they had plans for him. But they didn't have great creative plans for him. But, man, I thought, you know, man, my time here might be limited. The guy's a little bit younger than me, a little bit probably better, classically better looking than me. So I thought, you know, my job might be on the line here. But so get to WWF. I always think senior guy calls the match or the heel calls the match. Or, you know, the most over guy calls the match.
What something like that.
Well, how do you break it down?
You know, it depended on who I was in there with, you know. It just really, you know how like, you know how, like, a pack of dogs, they could be a bunch of alphas, but they still find their place? You know,
right.
If somebody's better at me, I let them call it, you know? Like, if I was in there with Sean, he'd call it. But, you know, if I was in there with somebody else, I'd call it, you right. know? Or, you know, if I was in there with Scott would call it. If I was in there with Kev, I'd call it. So it just depended, you know? Just really depended.
When I got in there with, when I came to WWF in 95, late 95, I was working with Sean a lot. I was getting kicked in the mouth a lot.
Yeah.
and I remember this. Yeah. At one point, this is when Sean had that belly button piercing. And, you know, when I finally came up with the kick to the gut for the stunner, I don't think I ever hit a stunner on him. But I kicked him in the gut so many times, I think I kicked the piercing the out button. Of his belly button. That didn't get me any love from Sean. But I rolled in. I think it was a point in Sean's time there. He was getting a little burned out. And so when I came in, I was working with Savio, and I worked with Savio for 2 months. And Savio got
great.
Me back in shape. Yeah. I love Savio. And so, man, all of a sudden, I start working with Sean. He goes, you know, you call it. Man, I just jumped on that like a duck on a June bug. So I call all my matches with Sean. You know, called all the matches with Brett. We was working in Houston one time, and I worked with Sean. And we had a hell of a damn match. And Brett says, hey, man. He goes, good match. He goes, I work with you anytime. And sure enough, you know, a couple years year later, he called me. You know, that's when we worked that match in 96 in the Garden. And he handpicked me to work with him. But, you know, they would let me go out there, and they were both – Brett was older than me, Sean the same age. Both had more years in the business. Both were tenured WWF guys and household names. I was just – guy's a pretty good mechanic, but they respected my ability, so they let me call a match.
I noticed when I worked with you the few times I – had the pleasure of working with you. You were really like on the ball about calling stuff on the fly. I mean, really on the ball. Honestly, Steve, I'd never been in the ring with somebody that was that sharp at calling a match on the fly like that.
I think some of the times I could be pretty abrupt with calling something, but I didn't call long drawn out high spots.
No, but it was all good stuff.
Yeah, but I would just, I think half the time I said shit. And I didn't like people seeing my calls either. But a lot of times stuff was said in transition. So I'm just trusting the guy heard whatever the F I was saying to send him in for the ropes or whatever the call was.
Yeah. I mean, we'd be in there with several different people, and you'd come over and find me and go, reverse it, spin kick me. Something like that. I mean, it's so simple stuff.
Were you in that match in Houston when it was, God dang, Billy Gunn was on the opposing side? It was Houston. It was a pay-per-view. There was a bunch of us. It was like a 6 or 8-man tag. Me, Cactus. I thought you might have been on the side with Billy Gunn. who was it? Savio Cactus Jack. Were you not in that match?
I don't know. It doesn't sound familiar to me.
God dang.
I had to remember that
one. I remember there was a spot where a trash can somehow got introduced into the ring. Terry Funk, I think, was a part of the match with Cactus Jack, and there's a trash can involved. And I looked right across the ring as soon as I saw that trash can. I looked at Billy, just kind of give him the Iggy. Yeah. And Billy and me, we used to ride together. He kind of read my mind and knew exactly what I was talking about. Sure enough, here comes Billy. And just overhead throw, and I just launched that trash can at him like that, longwise, and pow, right in the friggin' face. It was tremendous. Blew the roof off the crowd. Anyway, let's take a quick pause for the calls and thank another sponsor who makes this podcast possible, and then we'll get back to the questions that everyone sent in to questions@steveaustinshow.com. So, big ups to TrueCar. If you're looking to buy a new or used vehicle, then you need TrueCar. When you register with TrueCar, you'll see what other people in your local area pay for the car you want. And from there, you can connect with a local TrueCar certified dealer and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. TrueCar shows you real pricing on actual inventory, so you see competitive pricing offered to you by TrueCar certified dealers for vehicles that are actually on their lots. And you'll see all the dealer incentives before you get to the lot, so you can feel confident about the price when you show up. TrueCar makes car buying easy, no matter if you're looking for a brand new or used vehicle, and the stats don't lie. Over 3 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. There are over 13,000 dealers in that network, with some 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available. So do yourself a favor and go to TrueCar for your next car buying experience. TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a better car buying experience and feel confident about your decision. Some features not available in all states.
Hey, have you heard? Podcast One has a whole bunch of awesome new shows filled with big names that are waiting for you on our brand new, amazing app.
This one's a game changer.
There's Norman Lear talking to Amy Poehler, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Charles Barkley. Geffen Playhouse Unscripted with Bryan Cranston, Josh Gad, and soon, Neil Patrick Harris.
Nice.
OC Real Housewife, Heather Dubrow's World. Lady Gang's Three Mimosa Podcast with Leah Michelle, Nelly Furtado, Elle King, and more.
Plus, every episode of The Adam Carolla Show, Dan Patrick, and Rich Eisen.
And if you like what happens in the ring, we've got Steve Austin, Chris Jericho, Chael Sonnen, and a whole bunch more.
So download our one-of-a-kind new app and see for yourself.
Go to the App Store, Google Play, or download it now at podcast1.com.
Steve Austin. Unleashed.
Let's get back to a couple of the questions that some of the people sent in. Question, was it bad having to wear Kane's mask in your storyline with him? Trev.
Oh, yeah. I was the one that took his mask. You know that?
No, I can't remember.
Yeah. Well, you remember when, Kevin and Scott came back and we were doing the NWO thing? Well, right around that time, Kane was in the gym shrugging like 405 or something like that and tore his bicep. On 405 for a guy like Kane is a pretty – I shrug 405 easy. So, I mean, that's really nothing like for him. Matter of fact, I think he won't even admit it was only 405. But anyways, he tore his bicep, and it was a – you know, serious deal, and he had to be out. So we jumped him, and I beat him with nunchucks and took his mask off, and I'd wear his mask out. I didn't care. I thought it was great. Come on, you know, even if the mask stunk, like, you know, it didn't matter. Like, that's Kane, and I took his mask, and, you know, I got to wear it on TV.
So the hygiene thing didn't bother you any?
No. He used to, hey, let's be honest about it. You know, when you're on the road every day and you have a limited amount of masks and gloves and that stuff's going to start stinking. You know, he used to carry some Febreze around with him, and he was always spraying Febreze on that stuff.
God dang, dude.
And Leon. Fader time.
I used to feel so bad for Sting, because Sting would be in the corner working with him, and Vader would be, and Leon is, I consider him a very good friend, and
he's
we
awesome.
Never talk, but I love Leon. But, man, his gear got really funky.
Yeah, it did.
And then he was doing those big bear paws on Sting. I mean, he was just battering him like a ram. He was laying his stuff in. And those gloves carried a lot of funk.
Yeah.
I got to give Sting a lot of credit for hanging in there. And I'll tell you what, you talk about two of the people that I thought brought out the best matches in Sting were one Ric Flair, probably made Sting, and Big Van Vader.
Hard to argue that.
But his gear got funky.
It did. That to the point, like, you know, that actual smell had the name Vader time. Like, the if you smelled that smell, it was like, oh, yeah. Vader time.
How good were you about washing your clothes?
Not always the best.
Was your stuff more like
it was just
plastic
spandex.
Or was spandex? Okay, it's like, yeah. about every third night, you know, you could just get in your room. You know, a lot of times it was like a Motel 6, a Super 8, a Econo Lodge, Red Roof. You know, yours at that level, or some Jabroni line that wasn't even a chain. If you just, you know, just put your stuff in a
bar of soap,
and just squeeze it, and all that. I was wearing black trunks. And all that dirt that would just pour out there, and you'd have that plunger pushed on the sink, because you just see all that shit that was in the water. Like, holy smokes, these things are dirty.
Yeah.
But that was a kind of a courtesy thing. But I didn't travel with, like, truckloads of gear.
And you just had trunks, man.
What I had.
It's not like you had a three-piece, like, tight singlet trunk ensemble, like... So if I washed my stuff out in the sink and it didn't dry, like, I had to wear wet gear. And so, like, to me, it was a toss-up which one I hated worse, wearing wet gear or smelly gear. And I think I hated wearing wet gear worse, to be honest with you.
The one time I checked my bag with my work gear on it, and I can't remember where we were, somewhere in the Midwest. But anyway, I didn't have nothing to work in, and that was the time I wore Bobby Eaton's Midnight Express stuff. I talked about it on the podcast before. I outweighed Bobby by about 40 pounds minimum, and I was wheel heavy, you know, and he was just kind of regular body. And I borrowed somebody else's boots. I can't remember whose boots because I had a size 13 foot, but I wore Midnight Express gear. You talk about
the tights
like
too?
J-Brone. Do what?
You got the tights on?
Oh, dude, I wore the whole gimmick. And the Midnight Express of Bobby Eaton's one of my favorite workers of all time. And, you know, Bobby was always one of those guys that carried a big duffel bag and, oh, well, yeah, boy, need a thread?
He had everything in that bag, right?
Need an extra toothbrush?
Yeah.
If you
need some laundry soap?
Yeah, but Bobby had it. No, I mean, but it was cool because I was such a Midnight Express fan, I got a chance to wear his gear. Someone asked me a question, and I'm looking for this right now. All right, I fumble left around for another question, but I have two more questions. I'm trying to find that specific question. This question can be for Steve and Sean both, but what are your favorite eras of professional wrestling? This is from Matthew Mason down in Auburndale, Florida. What would be your favorite era?
I think everybody's, you know, has that nostalgia, like where they're a fan of the stuff they grew up on. I'm a fan of the 80s stuff, the early 80s.
Same here.
Yeah. I mean, you know, whether it's like I love going on the network and watching the old WCW shows from the studio in Techwood Drive, the small studio. Yeah. All that, you know, the old world class stuff, just it's all just in the Mid-South stuff, it's all gold.
I was a big fan of the Mid-South stuff and NWA stuff. I mean, and the Four Horsemen, Flair, I mean, that whole thing.
Were you a Florida wrestling fan? That's where I grew up.
I didn't
up.
Get enough Florida because it was so regional that I didn't get Florida until afterwards.
Yeah.
But I dug what I saw, but I didn't get a chance to grow up on it.
It was intense stuff, yeah. Barry was really, really red hot as a baby face down there when I first started coming. And Dusty was too, and he was the top guy, but, you know, Barry was the young guy coming up.
I was watching Barry Flair's from 87 or 88. I think Barry's match with Flair in 86 was Meltzer's match of the year. That's when he grew that little gimmick.
Oh, that must have been the Battle of the Belts 2 match from Orlando.
Yeah, almost an hour.
Yeah.
I didn't watch the entire match, but I just didn't like the mustache on Barry. It wasn't a good look.
That was the only time I ever saw him with the mustache was in that one match.
Yeah. But I preferred the one from, I think it was 87 or 88, and it's about a 30-minute match, and I can't remember the finish. Flair retained or he won the belt that night, but I thought it was better than the 86 match. I just didn't like Barry with that look.
Yeah.
It didn't work for him. Yeah. Hey, here's a question for you. Any interest on helping the young and upcoming wrestlers? And what's one thing you would change if you could change his life, Mike Lopez?
I have tons of interest in helping the young wrestler. I mean, that's kind of what I love to do. I mean, I'd love to do it more, but I mean, it's just right now, you know, I have other things going on. But what was the other part of the question?
One thing you could change if you could change your life.
like the first thing that pops up to me is like not failing my children as a father. Like that's really like the only thing that I have serious regrets over.
Are you close with your kids now?
I'm getting there with my daughter, my son. That relationship we're, you know, working on. But
how old are your kids?
25 and 21.
Holy
yeah.
Mine are 25 and 19.
Wow, man.
And we ain't close. I mean, my oldest daughter was here and she went back to England. My other daughter's in England. It's like, Dad, like I said in interviews before, yeah, I never won the Father of the Year award.
Right.
Yeah, so that'd be probably one of the things I would wish I'd done better at.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
That's the thing, man. Other stuff is, you know, things I did to myself.
Hey, here's one. What do y'all think about the WWE not doing pyro anymore for the entrances and start of the shows? And that's coming from Cameron.
I think that a lot of people are making way too big deal about them cutting the pyro. I mean, I don't think it's necessary. I think if that's the only thing that's making people like your show, you got a huge problem. So, big deal.
To me, pyro doesn't make a show. Now, in the context of what the business, you know, used to be, you know, back in the days, I remember when they get what they call it, pyro and ballyhoo.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, man, you know, they'd be hitting the music, and man, this is when they had that badass theme song, and those that pyro, just those big explosions.
Oh, they don't have that anymore?
No.
Oh, okay. See, I kind of dug that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I dug the hell out of that.
Yeah, that was badass, but it was like a two-hour show.
Yeah.
And it was in the Monday Night Wars, and they had their type of flame shooting up or whatever, so I thought you had to have it back in the day, but I don't know if it fits for a three-hour show.
And, I mean, everyone and their brother that would have pyro on a big show, like, isn't getting it now, and you know.
I mean, here's the thing. Can I sit there and watch the show these days? And say, oh man, they should be doing pyro. No, I can't say that at all. I thought it really fit. You know, back in the day, you know, when I was around, the Attitude Era, whatever it's called. But it's not something I say. Oh, you know, I'd watch the show, but they don't have pyro.
And some people are just using that as you know. See, it just goes to show you they're not doing so good now. People that try to say the industry's not doing well. I don't get that. I really don't.
So you think the industry is doing well?
I do. I do. And just because we're not, just because WWE isn't making the same, you know, isn't turning the same profit as it did in 1999, 2000, doesn't mean that wrestling isn't doing well. It's something else I said to Steve, and this might be veering off a little bit, but, you know, so many people are always like, you know, this stuff nowadays, it sucks. Like, just because and that's another tweet I put out, just because the industry passed you by doesn't mean it sucks. You know? I mean, yeah, there are certain things I don't like. I think that we did certain things way better than they do them now. I was talking to Kevin Sullivan the other day, Steve, and we were talking about that, like, how...
Kevin
Sullivan, Prince of Darkness, Kevin Sullivan, yeah. And we were talking about how much better the athletes are now, all the great things they do, and I'm like, and it does a lot of time make some parts of the matches suffer, and I compared it to when, you know, special effects started getting a lot better in movies. The movies started suffering quality wise, and to me, like, the special effects are the high spots and the flips and all this and that, you know, and the incredible moves, and so I think, okay, when you can rely on that stuff, it is easier to slack off on the little in-between stuff. And I think that kind of does happen a little bit.
Interesting.
A lot.
Hey, two more questions for you. This is something that's going on in the current landscape of everything. Question to X-Pac. Are you a Mayweather or McGregor fan, and who do you think will win this fight? That comes from Stephanie, probably one of the only females that listens to my show.
Wow. I'm a fan of both of theirs. I'm not a fan of like some of the stuff that came out of Conor's mouth on the last. You know, I think he pushed the envelope way too far.
I think you're trying too hard.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah.
I think it's like Dana White calls it a super fight. Yeah, it's a super fight. You got a guy crossing into the boxing world from MMA world, and Yeah, he's a dynamic fighter and very charismatic and cuts great promos. And you got Floyd Mayweather, who's undefeated, and you know will go down as one of the greatest of all time from a pure boxing standpoint. And now they're clashing. All the stuff they're doing, you know, they're promoting us. They're working these angles, but you don't need to work them that hard. They're going to turn it into a sideshow, and it's going to turn into a joke.
Yeah, it kind of is getting to that point. Like when you going to, okay, we did the Staples Center, now we're doing the, you know, Madison Square Garden. Was it MSG they did?
Yeah.
I think, you know, and just for the press conference. And I don't know, you're right.
Man. I don't think anybody's rather. I mean, the fight almost sells itself. So don't do this. I think you're trying too hard.
Yeah.
I can't find the, okay, so who do you think will win the fight?
Chael Sonnen came on the show. He's like, Floyd Mayweather better win, and he better do it. Very decisively. Come on.
Interesting standpoint.
Yeah. Just because, I mean, come on, man. Like, I mean, what can Connor do out there that's. He can't go toe to toe punch wise with him, can he? I don't know.
But, I mean, almost if he, from Rocky days, just shoves him in a corner and just starts teeing off on him, who's to say that can't happen? I don't know. I'm not a...
Maybe catch him with a knee or something on accident.
I'm not a people in the boxing world think, oh, man, that guy's just going to eat him up, chew him up, spit him up. But, I mean, if you're a UFC guy, you've always heard the old saying, you have a fighter's chance.
Sure.
I think Conor has way more than a fighter's chance.
Oh, I do. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, he hits like a ton of bricks. So, I don't know. I think it's going to be a spectacle. I don't know how to call it. I'm a McGregor fan, huge McGregor fan when he's in the octagon. I'm invested in the every fight that he's in.
Yep.
And, you know, I've kind of fell off the boxing scene a long time ago, you know, because I was, you know, Muhammad Ali guy, George Foreman, who's the other guy?
I was like a Hagler and Hearns.
Hitman Hearns, Sugar Ray, Roberto Duran, all those guys.
Yeah.
So I kind of just fell off. So I fell out of the boxing scene. So I don't speak the technical language. It'll be a spectacle. Hopefully it lives up to the $100 they're going to charge for it.
Hard for me to believe that that's going to be the case.
Probably. Last question. Someone sent in a question. I couldn't find who sent the question. Someone said to me, Steve, whether the question was for you. They said, Sean, if you would have been 6'4 and 240, what do you think would have happened with your career?
If I did everything else the same?
I don't know.
I don't think I'd have been. I think I'd have been a real awkward looking high flyer at 6'4", 240 pounds.
Well, that's you're saying if you would have flown.
I just don't think that, like, by the time I got in and like, I don't think that would have been enough size for me to. I don't think I was that much smaller to where that was a big.
Right.
Decider. I think for me, I should have worked harder on my mic skills, and I should have been a lot easier to deal with, and I would have been pushed a lot better.
How were you to deal with? Were you a prick or what?
I was really, with my first run there, I felt like I let a lot of stuff happen that I shouldn't have, and so I overcompensated for it when I came back. I didn't want anybody. If I thought anybody was messing with me or doing anything, I was like, I was typical. And I didn't allow them to work me any more than 15 days a month. And when you do that, then it kind of takes a lot of the opportunities off the table, doesn't it, Steve?
Yeah.
You know, to be like at the very top, you need to be available more than 15 days a month.
Yeah, you're kind of a 24/7 guy.
Yeah,
I mean, not 24/7, but yeah, if you don't make yourself accessible to do the things that's required of being in that spot, yeah, you're kind of taking yourself out of a lot of action.
And I was always, a contrarian. If they came to me, I'm gonna give you an example, and I might have told you this one because I've said it several times as an example of what a dumbass I was. Shane McMahon comes up to me. Yeah, we're gonna have. You know, just the Red Hot Chili Peppers do your theme music. I'm like, no, I want Uncle Cracker. I mean, come on, man. I love Uncle Cracker. He's a friend of mine, but Red Hot Chili Peppers, Uncle Cracker. I mean,
yeah.
But that was me, man.
Yeah.
We want you to work. Another, well, it was Vince Shane. Yeah, we were thinking about having you work with Jericho at Mania for the IC belt. I'm like, no, I want to finish my program with Kane, which was already way on its last leg, Steve. But no, I want to do this. So, I mean, does that give you an example?
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, like, but okay, so now, taking your yeah. brand now through, you, how many years were you in the business? Still are, but I mean, you know, 25?
Yeah, now it's going on 30.
Put your brain in any kind of body you wanted to now put all of your knowledge and experience gained from 25 years in the business, being a fan from the get-go, yeah. then being in it for as long as you were, describe the kind of body that you would put your brain in to be this new wrestler that was going to be on top of the world, that could be the next big attraction.
Wow.
Basically, I'm saying, tell me your idea of the new big thing.
I'm gonna.
If you could take your brain and put it in someone's body,
Randy Orton.
That'd be good. That'd be good.
That's just. I mean, there's several other guys I can think of, but I mean, Randy Orton.
Right.
Man, talk about good genetics.
No, good looking guy, good physique, not too big, not too small. Work with anybody.
Yep.
Work with a big guy. Work with a small guy. Work with a medium sized guy.
Yeah.
Great athletic ability.
Yeah. So I
and with that, all of your trade secrets, which are kayfabe and
shh.
You gotta, secrets.
Gotta make sure you're worthy of the trade secrets.
Anything you need to talk about, pimp, promote, get out before we hit the stop button?
No, you can follow me on my Twitter at The Real X-Pac, and my every Wednesday my show drops, and you know, X-Pac 12360, and I don't know, like Alex Riley, I'm having him on this Wednesday, but I think by the time people listen to this, it might be over with.
Hey, I'm gonna go start filming Broken Skull Challenge. We'll be in production when this podcast airs. If you start rolling through your phone and you can't find a guest, I'm only about 40 miles away.
Wow, hey,
dude,
man.
I'm just throwing that out there. We had discussion before. Come to the studio, ask me a couple questions, I give you some answers.
That sounds like
that
great
way
thing.
I'm able to return the favor. You get some content.
I would be honored, Steve, to be honest with you. And, you know, I already told you why I haven't asked you prior to now. Maybe even for our 1 year show. Maybe.
Super.
That'd be incredible.
I finished filming Broken Skull on August 25th. So I'm about, when is your 1 year show or just after?
I can't even remember. It's okay. Coming up, though.
I'm going to send you a text. I'll say, hey, man, I'm ready to do the show.
Sounds great.
You don't have to do a bunch of research. Just ask me a bunch of questions. I'll come up with answers.
Something's wrong if I have to do a bunch of research, talk to you, Steve.
And that's the bottom line, because I said so. Thank you.
And I got two words for you. So I got. Just want to get the last word in.
You contrarian, you. Hey, I want to go listen to a Red Hot Chili Peppers song.
Do you? No, I think you should listen to Uncle Buck. Or Uncle Cracker.
Yeah. You done botched the high spot. We're out. All right, everybody, give me the go-home cue. So I'm going to wrap up this podcast and ride off in the sunset. I want to thank Sean Waltman for joining me on this podcast. He came over a couple of weeks, and we recorded this evergreen podcast, which you just listened to. Many thanks, Pac. Always appreciate when you help me out. I'm looking forward one of these days to being a guest on his show, if he will have me, where we will tank the ratings and take his show into the gutter just like mine. Hey, I got a video for you. If you want to see the match where X-Pac turned on Kane, go to YouTube and put X-Pac and Kane in the search bar. It comes up as X-Pac Turns on Kane, SmackDown, October 28, 1999. Check that out and watch. Goddamn, Kane has been around forever. What a career that guy's had. Awesome. One of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. Smart as a whip, too. X-Pac. Breaking out some trade secrets, turning heel on Kane. Check it out. Hey, before I get into some plugs, I want to send out a thank you to everybody who sent in emails about Hershey a few weeks ago. I haven't been able to answer hardly any of those, because that's how busy I've been when Broken Skull Challenge starts. It's hard to get a goddamn thing going. And so I've got to do a few podcasts this weekend to keep up. It's hard to do these things when I'm in production. I want to say thank you. I'm trying to answer, at least say thank you for sending the email to almost everyone that sent one in. So I've been a little bit lax and trying to get that done because I've been busy, but I have seen all of them. They are all marked unread so that I can reply to them. And I appreciate your thoughts very much. We just got Hershey's ashes back today, as a matter of fact. We had her cremated, and Kristen said Hershey came back to the house today, and they made a paw print out of her right paw on a little, like, plate-type gimmick. So I'm looking forward to seeing that when I get back to 316 Gimmick Street. I appreciate all your condolences. Hey, man, couple of plugs. ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin has all the shirts that I wore in previous seasons of Broken Skull Challenge, and I'm going to have a shit pile for this year. So this season of Broken Skull Challenge is going to start airing, I believe, give or take, the back end of September, and that's a shoot. So all these shirts can be available probably about a week or two before that. We've got some pretty good shirts. I'm very happy with them. Anyway, I got an IPA beer. If you like IPAs or you want to try one, this is the best fucking IPA on the planet. It's called Steve Austin's Broken Skull IPA. It's from El Segundo Brewing Company. You can get Broken Skull IPA in California at Whole Foods and Total Wines. And if you ain't in Cali, check out InsideTheCellar.com and see if they ship to your state. And if you're looking to get either the cold steel Broken Skull knife or the new Working Man knife, you can get them at my new Amazon store. Amazon has the best price on both knives. Just go to amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin. I got to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. And you can find all my sponsors at podcastone.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page and then click on the Steve Austin Show banner. If you want to follow me on Twitter or Instagram, I am Steve Austin, BSR. The BSR stands for Broken Skull Ranch. Folks, coming to you from my pickup truck out here in Agua Dulce at the Broken Skull Challenge compound. Got my Traeger grill rolling, about to throw some shit on there, cook it, eat it, and have dinner for tomorrow. Life is good. I hope life is good for you, too. Until next time, folks. My name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
Thanks for listening to Steve Austin Unleashed. Catch new episodes every Thursday on the Podcast One app or subscribe at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.